At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Let's have a nice cup of TRE in the afternoon with Hannah Murray.
Joining us on the line now is our trivia guru, Graham Donald. How are you, Graham?
I'm fine, thanks, Hannah. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Good. Lovely to be chatting with you. I can't believe a whole month's gone by since last time.
Yes.
It goes so quickly, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
So we're talking naughty words today.
As yes, nautical.
Go for it.
Yes. So this time, but mainly it's all about sails and ropes at sea and the expressions that come from their use. But before we get to that, I think it's necessary to dispel the myth about sailing boats being pushed or driven through the water by the wind. Because no matter what it looks like, you know, the sail belling out to the front and whatever, the boat is actually being sucked along by the wind. It's a bit like the wing of an aircraft, which creates low pressure above its surface to generate lift to make the plane soar into the air.
Mm.
And the sail on a yacht or any other sailing vessel does exactly the same, except it's on the vertical instead of the horizontal.
Okay.
So it's low pressure at the leading front of the sail. I mean, if sailboats were pushed along the wind by the wind, then they could never sail or tack upwind, which they can do by adopting a zigzag path. I mean, the maximum angle the sail can present to the wind is about 45 degrees.
Okay.
Hence, landlubbers talking about people taking a risk as sailing a bit close to the wind.
Okay, if
you've got a tad over that angle, the sails can collapse back against the mast. You lose all drive, and the ship is said to be taken aback, which is an expression that on land meaning startled, surprised, or whatever.
Yes.
Now then, most of the names of the sails of the old days or present are pretty self-explanatory, but the two highest sails on the large warships of, I don't know, Nelson's days, one was called the Skyscraper, which was a nickname used at sea for years before it was adopted on land for tall buildings. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the skyscraper at sea, well, about 1700, and it was about a century and a half before it attached to buildings. And above the skyscraper was also sometimes deployed a sail called the Moonraker, which was a term adopted by Ian Fleming as the title for his Bond book of 1955,
mm-hmm.
and because it featured a high-flying space shuttle. In fact, the year after its release, that book was turned into a radio adventure romp in South Africa. And guess who starred in that radio production as James Bond? Your clue is, I'll have a pee, Bob.
Not Bob Holness.
Yes.
Really?
Not other than he, of later blockbusters fame. Although he's sometimes said to have been the first to take the role, he was actually the second, because the year before, the American actor Barry Nelson starred as Bond.
Well, I never knew that Bob Holness played James Bond.
He did.
That
Bob
is
Holness
brilliant.
Was the second person to play James Bond.
Well, there you go.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, going back to yachts with massive billowing sails, and the most famous of such mainsails is now known as the spinnaker. But it wasn't always so called. It was a very high-tech design sail which made its debut attached to the mast of the 47-ton cutter called Sphinx, which won the 1865 Royal Albert Cup race in the Solent. Now, naturally enough, it was immediately much copied and called the Sphinxster. Where you can see the problem here.
Yes.
Now, the Royal Yacht Squadron and other, you know, elite, snobby yachting clubs soon tired of smutty puns talking about, you know, strong gusts of wind rippling through your sphincter.
Brilliant. So, you can imagine, can't you?
You can, yeah. Oh, yes, turn around and drive the ship. And in 1866, they issued instruction the sail should be thenceforth known as the Spinnaker. Problem solved. Mm-hmm. Actually, the Sphinx is, you know, as appears in the Egyptian monuments, it was actually took its name from the Greek for the strangler. Because, because it used to lurk about on deserted roads or not, you know, remote roads and accost travellers and pose them a riddle. If they couldn't answer it, the creature strangled them. So Sphinx means to strangle, draw tight. So you can see the connection.
Yes.
Along now. Now, the ropes attached to the foot of a sail to impose control and direction are known as the sheet ropes, or simply the sheets. Mm-hmm. And they can number up to three. Now, any rope at sea that is slackened off to such degree as to be flying free is said to be in the wind. And in the case of the sheets, or the sail sheets, attached to the foot of the sail, if they were in the wind, then all control would be lost and to leave the vessel lurching around in all directions in the water. And that's why those who are said to have had one or six too many are described as being three sheets in the wind. Pardon? Now, such situation is also responsible for those who are sober but without purposeful direction being described as footloose and fancy free.
Ah, it comes from there.
Yeah, foot of the sail, the ropes attached to the foot of the sail, so you're footloose, fancy free, just lurching about wherever you want to go. Now, obviously, ropes were pivotal to the running of the ship, and for heavy hauling, a block and tackle, as it's called on land, was involved, except at sea. That device, it had two wooden components, one called the chock and the other called the block. Now, when all the free line had been hauled in, you know, pulling on the chock and block, the chock ended up hard against the block, hence things jammed in close proximity being termed as chock-a-block.
Amazing.
Now, I mean, some of the things from sea are, apart from the fact we couldn't even go into them, but the only way to free the device up was to pass the ropes back over the top of the wheels in the chock and then begin to backhaul more properly at sea, called overhauling, which is why that term is now used for the separation of the main components of any mechanical device. You know, clean them up, put them back together to return them to practical use. Overhauling. Now, when hauling in a free line to be coiled up for future use, this light work was achieved by one hand reaching out to take a fist-like grip on the line, pull it in as the other, and open hand reaches over the top of that fist to grip the line, make a fist and pull further in, and so on. And that's why those who are thought to reel in money like there's no tomorrow are said to drag in the dosh hand over fist. Mm. Now, at sea, nothing was wasted, so when a heavy rope was no longer fit for purpose on heavy hauling, the rope was, you know, be several strands, and these were unraveled to make thinner ropes for light tasks. Now, at the end of this line were the very light strands of old rope, which, tied into a knot that resembled something like the, you know, the Egyptian ankh, that looped, topped symbol with two legs or two arms. And these were used to secure the fold-up sails when they were back up against the cross brace and in place. Because these danced in the wind, they were nicknamed garcettes. which was the French for young girls. It's like the opposite, you know, of garçon, meaning a boy.
Mm.
Anyway, when these garçon ropes became unfit for even that light work, they had to be returned to the purser, and he put it in his locker. And as a perk, he would take that and flog it, all this old rope, to the nearest shipyard in his next port of call to get his money for old rope. Now the shipyards plucked apart even this thin rope into, you know, fibrous strands to be mixed with tar to make watertight the gaps between the decking on the new ships, or as packing between the joints of new timbers and beams or whatever. So garçon eventually morphed into gasket. So that was it. The French were little girl. Now, not all rope work was strenuous at sea, and the lucky chap who got to stand at the prow of the ship when the ship was negotiating unknown or uncharted shallows. Now, as he stood there and the rest of the crew were up and down the rigging, making alterations as he held from the helm, all he had to do was, he used to swing this lead weight and chuck it overboard. And it had interval knots to give an indication of the clearance between the keel and the seabed.
Mm-hmm.
So as this was considered a pretty cushy number, swinging the lead came to mean dodging work or whatever, just lazing about.
Yeah.
Now, just to digress a minute, the Mississippi in America is, for the most part of its length, very shallow, in fact, which is why the paddle steamers were all flat-bottom boats. So the chap swinging the lead line on such craft, he only had three knots, so he could call out, mark under, mark over, or mark twain, the middle knot. And, of course, the American writer Samuel Langhorne Clemens had in his youth worked as a riverboat pilot on the Mississippi. So in later life, he took the name of Mark Twain for his pen name.
Oh, that's interesting.
The middle knot man.
Yeah.
But back to sea. Now, there was another knotted rope carried by all large wooden ships of old. And these had knots spaced at 47 feet and 3 inches apart. Now, this rope was attached to a heavy log, which was chucked over the side of the ship, so the man on watch could count the number of knots it dragged out to give the speed of the ship in knots. Now, all this information was then chalked onto a slate, that the watch kept, and when they stood down for the new four-hour watch to come on, all these notes were properly entered and recorded in what was called the logbook, which would later come to mean, you know, any record book or indeed the detail book of a car. And the slate was then wiped clean, handed over to the new watch, who could then start off with a clean slate. Now then, conditions were pretty cramped below decks, hence the expression, no room to swing a cat, which is reference to the bosun's cat-o'-nine-tails whip. And when the crew was turned out in the morning, only the sick could remain below decks or under the weather. But so too could the, ladies of the night, who sailed with 18th century warships, because half the crew, they were there by the press gangs. So the captains were absolutely loath to allow such men ashore, lest he was left shouting, look, no hands, ba-bum. So when turning out the crew in the morning, the bosun's cry was shake a leg, which required anyone still in the hammock to shake a leg over the side. And of course, if it was a woman's leg, she was left in peace. She'd been working the night shift. But if it was a hairy leg, then that occupant was unceremoniously tipped out of his hammock and told to get to work, which is why shake a leg still means get a move on.
Yeah.
Get to work.
Oh, amazing. Fantastic. Fascinating stuff. Love it.
Boom, boom.
Thank you very much, Graham. Great to have you with us.
And, it's a pleasure, love.
If listeners want to find out more interesting facts about all kinds of things, you have a vast collection of books available.
Yes, available on, you know, all good online bookstores. Yeah, just spell Graham, G-R-A-E-M-E, and Donald like the duck, and sit back and be amazed.
Yes, enjoy. Lovely. Graham, thank you so much for being with us. We look forward to catching up with you again next month. I found a nautical song to play.
The next month will fly. Actually, next month, it's something that Wendy brought up.
Yeah.
She sent me an email asking, is this true that before the Battle of Agincourt, the French sent word, after our victory, we shall amputate the middle finger, or the other version of the story is index and middle finger, you know, the V sign, from all the English archers to prevent them ever drawing bow again. Well, it's unfortunately not true, but it's a fascinating, it's a widely held myth. But the longbow's drawn with three fingers, and if any English archer fell into French hands, they'd chop off a lot more than his fingers. There's a lot more expressions from archery we could look at.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Brilliant. I've got a boat themed song to play out. So Rock the Boat by Hughes Corporation.
Not sailing?
No, I was going to, but it's a bit slow, isn't it? So I've got something a bit more upbeat, more me.
Hello, you take care. I'll
see you next
month.
Thanks, Graham. Bye bye.